This is an ohs.com.au production.
Welcome to episode 71 of the Australian Health and Safety Business Podcast. I'm Brendan Tarazzi, the host of the show, and today I'm joined with Baron Hansen from the Be Here Now Community Happiness Project. Hi, Baron.
Hi, Brendan. Thanks. Great. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is all sounding very interesting, a community happiness project. What the hell's that about?
Community happiness project. Well, so I'm from Nowra. I grew up in Nowra. And when I was 18, I thought I would never live in Nowra again. And as soon as I could, I left town. And if anyone knows Nowra, it's a beautiful place, but it faces a lot of challenges. And there's a lot of areas around it that are very nice. You might have heard of like Berry, Huskisson, Gerringong, Kangaroo Valley, all wonderful little towns. Nowra is kind of like the service town. It's kind of like the butthole of the area, and it's got a really bad reputation. And so I thought I'd leave there and never come back. 14 years later, I found myself missing home, especially around the time of the bushfires, the bushfires that terrorized the region. And in that time, I'd picked up Vedic meditation, and I'm also a filmmaker. And I thought, how interesting it could it be to come and bring this practice of Vedic meditation back to my hometown, teach a community that's in stress, and see what happens if we follow it on film and document the process. So Be Here Now, a community happiness project was born. And the whole idea is trying to teach meditation to the community to see whether meditation can have an impact on the community at large.
Wow, that sounds like a super ambitious project, but amazing. What is the population of Nowra?
So the population of Nowra is 30,000. My goal is to try and teach 1% of Nowra. So trying to teach 300 people to meditate and then see whether that has an impact on different quantitative measures of the town, things like crime rate, hospitalizations, motor vehicle accidents, school attendance and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. I'd be curious to know when you left 14 years ago, what the population was then.
Yeah. I mean, Nowra hasn't had a super big growth. It was probably only 25,000. It hasn't been, say, like booming, because it's already quite developed. But yeah, a lot of the hamlet towns around Nowra have been developing, like Camberwara, Warragee, all of these little places. They're very different to when I left.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, before we go a bit further into the project, I might just rewind a little bit and find out, like, 14 years, where did you go? Like, what were you, 18, itching to get out of Nowra. What did a young Baron decide to do?
Yeah, so the first thing I did was, like any young Australian, is I took a gap year. I got into uni, but I took a year off and I travelled around the world. So just took with a buddy, got some backpacks, and we did all kinds of odd jobs and really got to experience what the world was like. And then I landed back at Wollongong University, and I studied there for 3 years and did a degree in commerce.
Yep.
Ended up in Sydney for a couple of years. But after a couple of years of Sydney, I ended up going to New York. And I went to New York City, and I'll admit it was for love. I was chasing a woman. Okay. Not in a weird way, it was mutual. We moved there together.
That's nice. Yeah. Yep.
And we fell out of love in New York, but I stayed in love with the city, and I stayed there for about 8 years. And so in that time, when I was in New York, I started a production company with a few other Australians. And I've always had a passion for storytelling. I think stories are wonderful things. I love just sharing other people's stories, like you do on this podcast. But I started making documentary films with these other Australians. And we ended up making probably about 250-odd short films, and then a couple feature-length films, film documentaries. And, so I really cut my teeth in storytelling there and got to meet a whole host of wonderful people. And it's also the reason which led me to meditation, is because trying to start a business, burning the candle at both ends in New York City, completely burnt out from the intense energy of New York, but also, you know, trying to start my own business, having employees, having responsibilities, and also probably partying a bit too much. Yeah. And I was training for ultra marathons at the time as well. So I was extremely fatigued, and enter meditation. And so meditation was that thing that just really brought me back to myself. back to my center, gave me that energy that is required to perform at a higher level in all of those areas. And so it was the thing that really stuck and helped me through that time.
So was there a key moment that decided, like, that was sort of like the turning point for you to go, I need something like meditation? Like did anything break, in other words?
Yeah, definitely. I think the catalyst was my business partner finding me sleeping under my desk at work on multiple occasions at lunchtime.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And kind of him kicking me, and he's a little bit older and wiser, and he's also a Vedic meditator, and he was like, very gently and very very nicely kind of guided me towards a Vedic meditation teacher in New York City. And almost immediately I felt the effects. I felt the fatigue leaving my body, and I also felt all this like extra energy that I was gaining from that practice. And it just kind of, yeah, led me on a path that continued to grow and grow and grow into becoming a teacher of it, because I was so passionate about it and it had such a profound effect on me.
Yeah, right. So can you just, for the audience, just give us a bit of an elevator pitch on what Vedic meditation is? What is it and how do you do it? And I know it's a deep subject, but
yeah,
sort of a simple way of describing what actually it is.
Yeah, very simply, Vedic meditation is a mantra-based practice. So when you learn Vedic meditation, you're given a individualized, personalized mantra. You think the mantra easily, effortlessly, and what happens is your mind de-excites. So the mantra helps us to release us of thoughts. And as we do that, the mind goes down to its least excited state and the body follows. So we're getting into a really, really deep state of rest. And studies have shown you're resting about 2 to 5 times deeper than sleep. So it's called a wakeful hypometabolic state, meaning you're not unconscious, you're conscious, but your body's at its hypo, meaning low metabolic floor. So you're resting really, really deeply. And we know that one of the Archimedes levers of health is good sleep, right? It's good rest. And, you know, the number one thing that doctors prescribe is rest, whether it's sickness, whether it's disease, whether it's mental health, whether it's injury, they say, go home at rest. And we're very good in the Western world at not resting.
Yeah.
busy people. And so I think fundamentally what Vedic meditation is it's a form of meditation that delivers deep rest to the physiology and then all of the benefits from that flow.
Yeah, right. And then so how often would you do that?
Yeah, so we recommend meditating 20 minutes twice a day is the recommended dosage. But one of the things I love about Vedic meditation is there's not too many rules. There's lots of guidelines for best practice, but the one thing we say is don't try too hard.
Yeah, right.
It's an effortless practice. So the whole practice is we encourage people to keep it effortless. And I really like that, because I think there's a lot of meditation practices out there, whether it be guided or whether it be like a concentration technique, which feel hard to do. And I think a lot of people are put off by meditation because they maybe have tried a guided meditation or they've sat in a concentration technique and it's hard to do. And I think for me, why Vedic meditation resonated so much with me is the effortless nature of it.
So it sounds like you're your own master, whatever that mastery might look like.
Yeah, the classification of Vedic meditation is called an automatic self-transcendent technique. So automatic meaning that it does it itself, but self meaning you do it as well. So you think the mantra easily, effortlessly, and then your body does the rest. So it's like, yeah, you are the master.
Yeah, right. So tell us about you. So you come up with this idea for a happiness project. You want to move back to Nowra. How did you actually make this thing start to happen?
Yeah.
You're in New York at the time.
Really good question. Yes, I'm in New York and studying to be a Vedic meditation teacher, and I came across these scientific studies that were conducted in the 1970s and the 1980s. And it was about this idea that if you could get a small number of a population meditating, that it would have a seismic effect throughout the community. And one of the most interesting ones was the Washington Peace Project. So this was in the summer of 1983. They took about 3,500 meditators, went to Washington for a summer, and all they did was meditate. They meditated, doing some advanced practice of rounding and things like this. Meditated, and what happened during that summer, the crime rate in Washington went down by 23%.
Whoa, that's amazing.
compared to five other cities of similar sizes where the crime rate stayed the same. And, you know, this is pretty incredible information, right? That a small number of people coming to a place meditating can affect, you know, something as significant as crime rates. And so I was amazed by these studies, and there's actually 55 published studies of this effect. And so as a filmmaker, I was like, wow, this is a story that needs to be told. Like, first thing I did was Google films about it. There's no films about it. And so I thought, this is an incredible opportunity to do this. And the perfect petri dish is my hometown. You know, Nowra, it's suffering from its own mental health crisis. It was traumatized by the bushfires in 2019, then floods, and then COVID pandemic. And it's a place in need. So, you know, thinking about how can I combine my, you know, my skill set of filmmaking with my passion of meditation teaching and bring that together and bring it back to home. It was really, in the end, it was a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, amazing. And so when did you start this project? You're back in Nowra now, I presume?
Yeah, so I launched in May of 2022. So I've been going just over a year. And it hasn't been without its challenges. You know, going back to a small town, moving from New York to Nowra it has its own challenges. I moved in with my parents, which has its own challenges. But overwhelmingly, what I'm seeing is huge support for the project. I think that the point of time that we are in history is that, like, we're living in a pandemic of stress, the whole world's stress, not just Nowra. And I think that, you know, people are looking for ways to combat that. I think people are highly addicted to our devices. I think that it's causing stress and anxiety and causing our body to be in an unnatural state of our physiology. And so I'm just finding a lot of subsets of the community that I wouldn't have expected to come and join, you know, like tradies who see about meditation on TikTok, or, you know, my GP, she came and did the course in the first few weeks and now she recommends people, you know? So it's like, I think at this point in time that, you know, meditation is widely enough accepted that it's beneficial and everybody knows the benefits. And so I'm just available. I'm just there, and I run two courses a week. Whoever wants to come can come and sit in, and it's growing slowly, incrementally over time, and just people keep showing up.
Yep. So your target's 300 people. Can you share with us what you're currently up to?
No one likes to share their number, Brendan.
You can give us a fraction if you like for the really smart people.
I'm 1/3 of 1%.
1/3 of 1%. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. You're a third of the way there.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. No,
It's going really well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess as that number increases, it's going to get a tipping point. I'd imagine it's like a flywheel that the more people that see the benefits, then they tell their friends, and the more people that come along. And
Exactly. And I think that, you know, I had an example this week where a woman came to learn to meditate, and her daughter had learned to meditate maybe 9 months ago.
Yep.
And she had seen the difference in her daughter. That was, you know, she was undeniable that, and meditation had done that. And she just said, yep, I'm in, you know, I've seen. And so, you know, as meditators, we just become examples, right? We become the best examples of how to be. And then people will naturally gravitate and ask, hey, what's your secret? Why are you always so happy? Or, you know, that really horrible thing that happened, how are you able to bounce back really quickly from that? And when that happens, that's that flywheel effect, right? That's that tipping point that you talk about of just it happening in many places and growing and growing.
And I guess, like, it might be helpful to explain to people, like, is there any religion involved? Because I think a lot of people that don't know about meditation probably think that, I don't know, they got to become Buddhist, or I'm not sure. Like, how can you explain a little bit about how meditation works and in that area?
It's a really good question, especially going into a town like Nowra where Christianity is quite prevalent. That Vedic meditation, it comes from India. It comes from the Vedas, which is ancient books of Indian knowledge, but it's not a religion per se. And the big difference why I say it's not a religion, or everyone says it's not a religion, but it's that we don't tell people how to behave. So we don't tell people what's right or wrong. It's a simple mental technique. We teach people this mental technique, and then you know, they can behave however they like. And even when I'm instructing people in Vedic meditation, I never say no. I say no, like K-N-O-W, like do the research. Like if you like drinking, drink all the drinks and see how it makes you feel, you know, do all the things. But what happens is as our awareness grows through meditation is that those things that maybe didn't serve us become less relevant and we start to have spontaneous right action. So instead of like forcing people to be a certain way or suggesting people be a certain way, it's just raise our level of consciousness and then we just start behaving well towards others naturally.
Yeah, so like it sounds like you just live your life how you want to live and you're sort of doing research and then after a while you work it out for yourself what's going to work for you or what's not going to work for you.
Doing the research and, you know, like I never want to be pushing meditation on anyone either. It's like I'm always here to let people arrive on the journey they're at. And, you know, everybody will come at different times in their own journey. And so it's like even the whole idea of having one teaching 1%, right, it makes my job a lot easier because I'm not trying to teach to 100%. You know, if I went and did a talk to 300 school teachers last week and instead of trying to sign up all 300 teachers, I'm like, I only have to get 3 out of this group, you know, that's my goal. And so it makes it a lot easier when you're trying to push towards something when it's, you know, it's more manageable.
just on that note, why do you think that, like, I've always wondered why meditation isn't introduced into the school kids? Like, it seems like it would be great for everyone, like the kids, the teachers, parents. Was that a true thing? You did go and speak to 300 school teachers?
I did, yeah.
Wow, amazing.
Bomaderry High had brought together all the teachers from the region for a professional development day last week.
Yep.
So I got to go and speak to all of them. And, you know, I think teachers are one subset of the community that really can need meditation. Oh,
100%,
they're so stressed out. But look, in terms of getting into schools, yes, I think it's a great idea, but the thing is that with meditation or anything really, you have to have this level of worthy inquiry, right? You can't force someone to sit still or close their eyes. And especially, you know, there's people who have experienced trauma where closing their eyes can be actually quite traumatic. And people, especially like if there's kids or people who come from unsafe homes, closing their eyes might be quite traumatic for them. So we're never going to go into a school as Vedic meditation teachers and force it upon anyone. And for me, my theory is first get the teachers meditating, then get the parents, and then let them be the examples and let the children kind of, lead by example. I'm interested. You have some boys that I met the other day, and have they had a level of worthy inquiry? Are they interested in meditation? How's their level of mindfulness?
Well, definitely. I mean, the oldest one, he actually did, when I learnt how to meditate, he did the course with me, but he dropped. He was probably about 12 at the time, so he lasted for about a year, and then he's sort of dropped off now. But I've got to say, he's got a really steady, nice outlook on life. Like his teenage years, I'm not saying that they've been perfect, but they've definitely been. It's been pretty smooth sailing for him. And then the second one, he's had like a little mantra as well. But it hasn't stuck yet. But I'm sure it rubs off in some way. I see what you're saying. I mean, almost like to get into schools, it can't be a mandatory thing. It has to be almost like an extracurricular activity, and it's a class that's available for anyone who's interested in coming to, as opposed to, right, it's 9 a.m., everybody sit cross-legged and you're going to close your eyes for 5 minutes or whatever it is. I see what you're saying now. It has to sort of naturally, the students have to be interested in the first place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've started filming. Are you doing like one student at a time? Like how does the doco unfold for this project?
Yeah, really good question. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to tell individual character stories. So we're bringing on what we're calling unlikely heroes. So people who you wouldn't expect to meditate. and we're capturing basically like a day in their life of what their life is like before they learn to meditate, sit them through the course, and then check back in about 6 months' time to see whether they've kept it up and how their practice is going, whether there's been any changes in their life. And so using these individual characters to tell the story of the town and tell the story how the town is changing as a whole. And it's, you know, when I think about this, I think about like when you watch a great film, you often relate with a character, right? Or a documentary. You often like have this resonance with the person. So trying to find a broad spectrum of characters so that everybody can have at least one that they relate to. And then, you know, they're kind of like, oh, that could be me, you know, the grandma or my sister, she's a single mum, you know, single mum. So like, who's the character that you're aligning with, and who's the character you want to see win? You know, who's the character you want to see this thing to work and their life to improve?
Mm. And so how many characters do you think will be in the doco?
The good thing and the bad thing about doing a documentary is that you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think ideally like 8 to 10 characters, but it's also a lot, right? You know, if it's a 90-minute documentary, you got 8 characters, you're only getting like 5 or 6 minutes with each one to tell their whole life story and then the change that's occurred and then tell the story of the town. So, it's we're shooting wide with a wide variety of characters, and then we'll probably get down to the last few who have had the most significant change or have had the most interesting story. And that's kind of where we're at right now, is just we're actually doing another block of filming in September, which we're going to onboard another like 6 to 8 characters and go from there.
And so does everyone, I'm assuming not everyone wants to get involved. They, like, some people just want to learn and they don't want to be filmed. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I kind of have like two parts. It's like you can just come and learn and do the course, and it's just, you know, part of the project. And then there's people who are actually casting to be in the documentary. So they're people who have shown interest to be filmed.
Okay.
And so there's my group of weekly meditators who are coming through every week, and then there's like the special group everyone's special, but the ones who we're pointing the camera at.
Yeah. And during the meantime, are you doing other docos as well, or are you full-time as a teacher now and doing this doco project?
Yeah, so what's interesting is, you know, I had a company and have a company in New York called Convix, and it's our production company, and I really wanted to keep contributing to that company while also doing this project. But my business partners just gave me full leeway to focus fully on this project, which is really exciting for me. But the great thing is that our company continues to make great films, and I throw in my 2 cents every now and then. But you know, it's an incredible thing when you build a company, and I know you've built a few companies in your days, but like to be able to see that company continue to grow and evolve without you, letting go and letting the others run the show. And so that's been a whole exercise in itself, and also their trust in me that I can get this project done as well. You know, it feels great.
Oh, good for you. Well, look, it sounds like a very exciting project and one that's going to have a big impact. If people want to find out more about you, Baron, and also the project, do you have a website that they can visit?
Yeah. So one of my big things is that not only do I want to raise the level of consciousness in Nowra, I want to bring more conscious energy to Nowra. So I encourage anyone who's hearing this is to come visit Nowra, like pop in, spend some money in town, come eat in the cafes, do some shopping, you know, bring that, you know, that energy to Nowra. There's a really good coffee shop called Hyper Hyper if anybody likes coffee and they're passing through. So the one thing is you can come visit Nowra, come change your perception of Nowra. There is a website, BeHereNowra.com, which has all the information about what's happening and how to get involved. If anyone's interested in learning Vedic meditation, I do teach courses in Wollongong and Sydney and Los Angeles as well. So I'm kind of a bit all over the place. I do 3 weeks in Nowra, 1 week somewhere else. So I'm often in between, but I think that the other big thing, the way you can be involved is just learn Vedic meditation. It's a simple practice, but we know that it can have a profound effect. And by, you know, raising your level of consciousness, it has a ripple effect for the people around you. And you're the 1% if you're learning meditation, you know, you're that 1%.
No, that's brilliant. Okay, Baron, thanks so much for sharing your story today. It was super fascinating.
Thanks, Brendan. Appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to an ohs.com.au production.
I hope you've been enjoying listening to the podcast. If you are, it'd be great if you could help us out by leaving us a review and sharing this with friends and colleagues.